Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. Well, we had quite a few interviews last week, and we're probably going to be playing some more. As a matter of fact, I had a phone conversation with the founder of a new organization, Friends of Liberty, and I will probably play that for you because it's pretty interesting. In this conversation, we talked about other organizations and other people, and I want you to know I have reached out to very, very specific organizations to try to, you know, because they're myopic. Now, all of these different organizations, well, actually, let me start over. Having listened to quite a few different myopic radio shows, it dawned on me that, you know, with all of these, you know, Second Amendment shows, with all of these religious shows about abortion and, you know, and whatever the flavor they want to throw on, you know, the myopic issue of these evil things we're living in today, it kills me how the listeners, how America is just enthralled. They're just sucked into these. But in the military, Congress calls them stovepipes because it's a single issue. It's a single isolated thing that you can't connect with. And I say this because having reached out to quite a few organizations, I have ran into this thing called a trust or a covenant and or restrictions, contractual restrictions with these organizations that they cannot work with any other organization that is not doing what they're doing. In other words, their hands are tied and they're taking money and they're telling you that they're out to solve the problem, but they're not. There's no way our problem will ever get solved as long as we continually spread our focus on these single issues instead of uniting. The process of uniting puts every single issue into the scope, as a target, looking at the entire, because it shifts the target from the one issue to government being the issue. Common Core, education, healthcare, Obamacare, all of these single or myopic issues, these, you know, one trick ponies, whatever you want to call them, they're destined to fail if you're engaged in fighting them. A great case in point, the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is clinging on to the ability to protect your right to have a gun when that has nothing to do with the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment, it has everything to do with the responsibility of the citizenry in enforcing the Constitution. I want you to think about that. When you look at the Second Amendment, when one pulls up the Second Amendment, what does one find when one is actually reading the text of the Second Amendment? It would be something like this: a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Well, what does that have to do with your right to bear arms? You as a personal citizen, this is tied directly to, and I'll back up, and this is tied directly to Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15, which states that Congress shall have the power to call for or provide for calling forth the militia. Fact of the matter is, who's the militia? That's you. There are two types of militia, and there are two actual organizations. There is the organized militia and the unorganized militia. If you're not a part of the organized militia, which nobody is really today, then you're a part of an organized, unorganized, and then there is the unorganized, because that's the rest of us. We all have the responsibility of ensuring that constitutional laws are being enforced and unconstitutional laws are not being enforced. It was left to us. So the Second Amendment really doesn't have anything to do with your right to bear arms. It has more to do with your responsibility to guard and enforce the Constitution. This is why the and if you haven't read the article, What is the Real Problem? You need to. Because this is why it's so important to understand what is a standing army and why were the framers so afraid of it? Why did the framers use army and militia synonymously? Understanding these types of things starts helping you kind of peel back the orange, because it may not have as many layers. And it may be just as that simple as getting that big peel back and then, okay, you've got the meat right here. Fact of the matter is, the framers empowered the citizens to be the enforcers of their Constitution. How does that have anything to do with just a simple right of bearing arms or your right to have guns? Okay, I get it that you have to have guns to enforce, but they have already perverted and have taken away your responsibility of enforcing the laws because they've created all these other enforcement agencies. So we're going to just settle because they're going to let us have guns. They've already taken away the militia. They've already created an unconstitutional National Guard. And, you know, there's lots of people in the National Guard that think they're really patriots. And it's not that they're not. It's just that they're illiterate. They just don't understand that the Constitution did not allow for a National Guard. It stated and declared that every state was to have a militia. You want to change that? You want to create a National Guard and put away? Then you need to change several parts of the Constitution. Because Article 1, Section 8, there's a couple of subsections that reference the militia. So if you're going to institute a National Guard, you need to go through and change what the references to the National Guard, insert the word militia, and then identify how the National Guard is replacing the militia. But they didn't do that. They just assumed the power to do so. And as you know, the militia is actually down to the county. It's organized down to the county. The National Guard isn't organized that way, nor is the National Guard a part and a component of the state. In other words, why is it that the National Guard is constantly funded by the U.S. military? Well, so it says that they're supposed to, but that money's supposed to go to the states, and the states are supposed to set up and organize their militias. They're supposed to identify who their officers are and so forth. And understanding these things in the Constitution is critical. But the fact of the matter is we just accept the way they have decided to make the game fit their needs without going through the formal process of making those changes. They've assumed all sorts of roles, responsibilities. This is why we have multiple standing armies. The Department of Forestry is a standing army. The Department of Education is a standing army because there's bureaucrats out there enforcing federal educational laws. We have lost already unless we stand up. Not on the myopic issue. It's not about your abortion issue. It's not about your immigration issue. It's not about your Common Core. It's about compliance to the Constitution. And so when I listen to all of these shows, and there's people that are, you know, it's great that these people are entertaining and they've got really good guests and they're making good money and they're not going to get us anywhere. We've got nowhere with everything that has been going on that has been a part of the status quo. And there are status quo organizations that say, yes, we got to keep doing this. This is what we need to do. I hope you're starting to get it. When you start listening to somebody that is all focused, there's all sorts of gun talk shows out there, or talk shows that talk about guns. How's that? And there are all sorts of religious shows, or talk shows out there. There are all sorts of shows that have, you know, very specific issues. Their focus is immigration or what have you. My friends, if you listen to those and keep it in context, what is it that they're talking about that is going to solve the problem? Can they solve all of the problem? Are they just focused on one little minute problem? And that's it. They're focused on one minute problem, which is dividing us, which is actually taking our focus away from the real problem. All of the unconstitutional government. And so anyway, like I was saying, I was talking to somebody else about, you know, the getting organized and so forth. And we'll probably have that conversation. But let me finish that when we come back after this break and tell you a little bit more about these conversations and what they're trying to do. And we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogues.
Well, so the gist of what I'm saying is that the amount of money, the amount of effort, the amount of resources that are going into all of these myopic issues to confuse people. What's more important? What is it that we need to do? Is it this thing or is it this thing? No. None of those things will solve the problem. None of them. The only thing that will solve the problem is republic review. Getting your state legislators to take a stand and getting your state legislators to audit everything that the federal government has done and getting them back into the framework with political force, by the way. The states have all the political force necessary once they've obtained and I don't want to just say a simple majority. They have to obtain a majority over Congress. In other words, you have to have a majority of the states in both houses, state legislatures as well as the Senate. Now, if you have any questions, you want to come on the air, just reach out, let me know, send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And or you can just call 425-270-5416. And actually, we're going to be putting our national number up pretty soon. So that way you'll be dialing that number instead of the 425. Anywho, because we're playing around with the phone lines as we talk. Anywho, what we wanted to do is we wanted to get back into content today. And we've already talked about the scale of liberty. We've gone over republicanism. We've gone over natural law. We've gone over the enumerated constitution versus a general constitution. We've even talked about the essay on property. So what I wanted to talk about next was because what the framers had dealt with, you know, there were all sorts of little problems that they had. I mean, there were the witches that, you know, there were the things that were going on locally at the local level. And then there were things that were going on at the state level, because you got to remember that the national level didn't exist at the time. And so what was going on at different states was a lot different, which is why, you know, they had the Tea Party up in Boston. And there were other comparable resistance and or we'll just keep it in the context of resistance from the colonists with the British. Now, it seemed like in Massachusetts, Britain was far more focused in being heavy-handed. And that may have been more, and it may have lent more, to the fact that because they were the Puritans, they were not very receptive of others. They didn't like outsiders. They didn't like to be quartered. And boy, Britain was just pushing them to the limit. And so that's one of the reasons why, you know, the standoff and the shot that was heard right around the world outside Concord. And so as we went into the British, or I should say, as we were heading into the Revolutionary War with the British, there were a few laws that were passed. Now, I believe, I forget the day, but I believe it was in 1775 when that skirmish at Concord, you know, got things moving. And shortly after that, Continental Congress got organized. And they actually had come out and they had created these things called the Tory Acts. In October 6, 1775 was the first Tory Act. And then January 2nd, 1776 was the big Tory Act. And the intent was to try to help communicate to the colonists, you know, what the heck was going on. And as you read through this, one of the things they wanted to make sure was that they had exhausted all measures in trying to address their grievances with the king and parliament. And so they wanted to make sure that there wasn't a lot of misinformation that was going on, that they wanted people to know that, hey, we're getting into this war because, you know, We're not being treated as the people that we are told and we have, you know, we believe we are. And these were Englishmen. They believed that they were Englishmen. They were a part of England, even though they may have been a colony, but because they were a colony, they were considered second-class citizens, or actually even worse. Because in Parliament, the Commons, you had the House of the Lords, the House of the Commons, there was no House of the Colonies, which would have even been a lower class of people. And they wanted representation. That's, they loved their government. They loved everything that was going on and the direction that it was going. But they weren't getting representation. And representation was everything. Now, if they were believing as the people, representation is everything, why is it? Think about this. Why is it that your county supervisors, your county commissioners, aren't getting peeved off at the Senate in your state legislature why they're not being represented? And why is it that they're not going after them for, you know, their lack of representation? The counties have zero representation in the state legislature. They have to go and beg and plead. And there's always these little appeasements and so forth. But it's not like they actually have suffrage in that legislation, which they should have, just like the states are supposed to have suffrage in the Senate. So anyway, January 2nd was when they had this big Tory act. And it was explaining the things that they had done and why they were moving forward. But here's the interesting thing. They actually started drawing a line, and they were basically saying that if you're going to support Britain, you know, be forewarned, because we will detain you, we will arrest you, and we will take your property. And so they actually had these goals. The next Tory Act was written just a couple of months later, March 14th, 1776. And then the a couple of more were done in June 18th, and then June 24th. These Tory acts kind of languished for a while until they won the war. And then at that point, what did they do? Because they realized that there were people that felt that they were supposed to be the subjects of the king and they were loyalists to the king. And here this new colony, this new nation had stood up that was not going to recognize the king, and they were going to be independent and sovereign. So what ended up happening was that they actually, you know, started deporting these loyalists. And it was said, and there's no really good accurate numbers. It's just like, you know, the accuracy of the number of how many people died from Europe coming to America. How many of the natives, I remember reading in, I think it's a Patriot's View of History, American History, where they were talking about, you know, there were these accounts that millions of people had died, and they're saying, well, there really wasn't millions of people that even were living here. It took a couple centuries from the beginning of 1600 to the end of the 17 going into 1800, where we had just in America quite a few million people. The numbers that they were throwing out were so arbitrary that they started challenging them. And it's the same thing with the numbers of the British loyalists. I believe if you go to Wikipedia, you'll probably find that they're saying about 50, 60,000 people. That's a pretty good significant number. I believe I have even read up to 100, 110,000 people who were British loyalists, who some of them were actually packed up and taken out because they were, let's call them, hardcore supporters for the crown. And they knew that these people, you got to understand, Benjamin Franklin's son, I forget the gentleman's name, but I know it was Benjamin Franklin's son, who was a British loyalist, actually supported and tried to create a militia for Britain in America during the Revolutionary War. And he didn't have much luck, because Britain was really fighting the war with mercenaries. I mean, they sent their troops over, their regular troops, but they just couldn't get the job done. That's why, you know, in the Revolutionary War, they got the Hessians and other people to, you know, come over and actually fight the Americans. And if you really look at what we were facing and how unorganized America was, it was a miracle that we even won, if you really think about it. But nevertheless, after the war, there were a good percentage of these people, and I believe it was the Belvoirs, who was actually very close to George Washington, who ended up getting, you know, taking what they had that they could carry and getting on a ship and going back to England. Now, a lot of loyalists that ended up leaving left on their own accord, and that there was really no accounting. They couldn't keep track of who and why left America at that point in time, but they knew that there was a pilgrimage out to leave America because they were British loyalists and they didn't want to have anything to do with these ruffian Americans that wanted to go their own way and enjoy individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And so a lot of these folks actually went to some of the other British colonies, and Britain actually supported their transportation for some of them. Some of them just went up to Canada. And so why is this important? Because do we not have communist sympathizers? We'll get into how this is a connection for us today. And so we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
What we're going through today is very similar to the Revolutionary War. However, we're facing a revolution that is anti-American, anti-Constitution. And so we are, you know, as a nation, we have this, I'll just call it this imbecilic concept that we can embrace, you know, the differences of opinions and so forth. However, the problem is people have had a hard time, if not for most people, it is impossible for them to distinguish between an actual contrary, a conflict, and or a perverse type of government laws and so forth that are occurring within our constitutional framework. Welfare and the welfare state by government is repugnant to the American system. This is where government is not to be picking who's to be winners and not to be supporting people. I'm sorry. That is not within the power of the federal government. Even the General Defense and Welfare Clause does not allow for the federal government to actually give, you know, welfare out. And as a matter of fact, we're going to get into the cod fishery bounties, where Madison debates this concept of using the public purse to help these poor fisheries of the cod up in New England. And so let me get into this very final Tory Act. And this is basically the war has begun, or the skirmishes have already occurred, and we're heading straight into the Declaration of Independence. As a matter of fact, Continental Congress is pretty much accepted, and at this point, they're drafting the Declaration of Independence, which is signed on the 2nd of July. And so this is what it says. Resolve that all persons abiding within any of the United Colonies and deriving protection from the laws of the same owe allegiance to the said laws and are members of such colony, and that all persons passing through, visiting, or making a temporary stay in any of the said colonies, being entitled to the protection of the laws during the time of such passage, visitation, or temporary stay, owe during the same time allegiance thereto. That all persons, members of, or owing allegiance to any of the United Colonies, as before described, who shall levy war against any of the said colonies within the same, or be adherent to the King of Great Britain, or others, the enemies of said colonies, or any of them within the same, giving to him or them aid and comfort, are guilty of treason against such colonies. That it be recommended to the legislatures of the several United Colonies to pass laws for the punishing in such manner as to them shall seem fit, such persons before described, as such be provably attained of open deed by the people of their condition of any of the treasons before described. Now, they were getting really serious, if you understand what I'm saying. And by the time at the end of the Revolutionary War, they finally won. Britain had finally packed up and left. They said, okay, then they looked over their shoulders. They looked down their streets. They looked in their neighborhoods and they said, all right, who was it that was actually supporting Britain? And they grabbed them, they rounded them up, and many of the key people that were financiers or true sympathizers putting them on their property or giving them subsistence and so forth, those people were packed up. They were treated as treasonous, even though at that point in time, America and the American cause was the cause that was breaking away. Now, I want you to understand, we have people today that are actively working Antifa and so forth that should not. I mean, these people are actually rebelling against the Constitution. This is why we need to really put into context Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And this, I'll just call it a gift, but it's here's something that's buried in the Constitution that has teeth that can get rid of at least public servants. And it's something that we can even build upon, because even in our history, the Tory Acts and so forth, we do not owe the people that are trying to wage war, whether that be political war, economic war, or whatever it is they are doing, they do not deserve the protections of this great nation. Bill Gates does not deserve protection of America. Him, Melinda, and their spoiled, rotten kids, they should be kicked out of here. They can easily go somewhere in the communist world. They go to China, Bill, and make a life there. You'd have nothing to do here because you are not supporting our Constitution. And he is always trying to find the back door to aggrandize his corporation, himself, his foundation, and everything else. There is a man, there's a narcissist that is in love with his own ideas, and he wants to inflict them upon you. And so we have the precedence in the history within our DNA to actually take these people and get rid of them. Now, I don't necessarily think we need to do tars and feathering and that type of thing, but I do believe that if there are people that do not like the fact that people here in America have the sovereignty and the liberty to enjoy their own freedom and their own failings and so forth. And so as we look at, you know, going into, because if we don't fight this revolution, I believe we will. But if we don't actually recognize that we're fighting people that are rebelling against the Constitution, we need to put this into context so that we can actually help cleanse our land once again. And that means a lot of people should probably either leave or at a minimum, they do not deserve suffrage. They should not be voting because these people have been voting to undermine. Yeah, we want money. We want the public purse to, you know, to bail us out. We want money, you know. And that's what they're voting for, unconstitutional things. And these people are contributing so that they can get more unconstitutional things for themselves. You understand what I'm saying? So we have this opportunity to start identifying who and what, because as far as I'm concerned, just like the framers, we don't need activists that are trying to rebel against our liberty and trying to take it away from us. As Washington pointed out, there are way too many people that are jealous of America and our liberties. And that stands true today. There are people that want to make sure that America is subjugated so that we are, you know, we're no longer free to do what we want to. And look over the past couple of months. How's that freedom working out for you now? How's that liberty? How's that Constitution protecting you now? If you don't see the threats and you can't see, then, and I know you can, but these other people that can't see it, if you need to help wake them up. I remember in boot camp, there was some talk about, you know, how you can, you know, wrap up a bar of soap in a towel so that, you know, it can hurt somebody but won't leave marks. You know, or wrap up a bat. Now, what I'm trying to say is that what we need to do is we probably need to look at this objectively, because can we realistically export all of these people? No, but we could take away their suffrage in certain factors. We have the technology today to make sure that people who have been open about rebelling against the Constitution, Pelosi, that person should actually be in jail. I mean, I think we could, if we did a full investigation on a lot of our public servants, a lot of them would probably go to jail if we got all of the evidence that we could present into a grand jury. There's no doubt in my mind they would probably be indicted. But there are others that are doing things that are supporting DACA, supporting things that are unconstitutional. Is DACA constitutional? No, because our immigration laws already are set. DACA is some law that is a deviation, and actually it's a perversion to our immigration laws. So anyway, I just want you to understand that the Tory Acts is a foundation that the framers had created, because they were already going through the same problems that we're going through. The problem is that in some ways, they are the majority, but they're not the majority in a Republican perspective. And what do I mean by that? Well, if you look at how many red states there are, there's still more red states than there are blue states. And when you start adding up representation, there may be almost equal amount of people that want communism to the equal amount of people who want liberty. But when it comes down to the states, and this is why state legislatures need to get this, they need to understand that they actually are in the position of being able to do some really great things in saving our liberty. Anyway, When we come back, we're going to take a glance. I'm going to set up the cod fishery bounties because that's where we need to go. And we're going to get into the cod fishery bounties in our next episode. But we're going to set this thing up. And so we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so the cod fishery bounties was the first time and this was in 1792. It was the first time the general welfare and the regulating commerce clause came onto the floor to say, hey, we have this clause, this power given to us to be able to be generous with the public purse. At least that was the perception. And so there was a bill that was brought forward for consideration to give financial assistance to those who are working up in the cod fisheries. And so Mr. Madison steps in and starts to, I'll just say, he starts to explain, if you want to use the word schools, he starts to explain the limitations and what some of these clauses meant. This is not the first time, and it was not the last time that these things came along. So what ended up happening was that we've had these same persisting problems that were identified in the ratification debates that were clarified. Everybody understood, and then it didn't take much time, as soon as they got that car out on the road, they got that general government, you know, firing on all cylinders, it was almost immediate that they said, well, let's go to the public purse because we now have all this money so that we can now, you know, help these people and promote, and this is going to be good for us. We're going to benefit by promoting this market space of cod fisheries. And so Madison ends up having to revisit those same things that had been explained during the ratification debates. Hey, have you guys forgotten? Well, this is a limited and defined government. And so this is the historic point, and this is why
I want to prove to you that it starts with the cod fishery bounties and it goes through the Department of Transportation as well, because they use the same arguments. They talk about, well, you know, we have the ability to regulate commerce. Well, and when you listen to Madison and when you listen to, Monroe, and when you listen to these other men that put these things into perspective to say, no, that's not the intent of that. Then when we look at today, because as we heard last week when Eric brought up in that interview on Friday, when Eric brought up the concept that the CDC felt that they've been granted under the Commerce Clause their ability to regulate these things. I mean, that's like the final step of making up squares as they go along type of thing. Because the CDC in its existence is unconstitutional. It's not an enumerated power within the federal government, or I should say within the Constitution. Nowhere in the Constitution was the federal government ever granted any role, responsibility, or power over health. And then they start using these mystical clauses, what I call them. They use these mystical clauses to try to say, well, because of this clause, and this clause, we can do this. This is why we go through the ratification debates on a regular basis, every 3-4 months. And we're going to be going through them. We're building up to that. But what we want to do is we've already covered those back in January and February timeframe. And now since the ratification debates had been done, we started to, we're moving beyond that. Now that's why we're in the Tory Acts, the cod fishery bounties and so forth. We're showing that there's this constant reminder. Now, so one of the things that I truly believe should have happened is that the ratification debates could have easily been documented and put out as a guidance to legislatures and to the people. Why did they bury them? I believe that Hamilton, Marshall, and others were very content in trying to make it up as they go along and trying to hide behind this nobility that was perceived by the people. Oh, these are good, noble men. They won't do us any harm. And they did. Marshall created unconstitutional footings that were used later on as they started, aggrandizing the bench's powers, because the bench doesn't possess any power. When we read the Constitution once a year, I point out that the entire federal court system is a passive system. They don't go out and create cases. The case has to come to them. They have no ability to reach down and say, we're looking for a case. The case has to come to them, and it has to be within their jurisdiction. And yet they reach into these potpourries of issues within the states that they have no business reaching into, whether it be homosexual marriage, whether it be abortion, whether it be the Boy Scouts. They have no business. There is no jurisdiction granted the federal bench on these issues. And yet they have been the proponents in moving these different social agendas and these cultural agendas in perverting America. This is why, if you look at some of the worst people, the people who have done the greatest damage to America, most of them have been on the court. A lot of them have been on the court. As a matter of fact, I need to get Douglas V. Gibbs on, because I know he wrote a book, I think. I think he wrote a book on the 10, or there's a number of the worst people, the people who have done more damage to the United States and our Constitution than anybody else. And I need to get him on so we can just kind of talk about that. Because that's a fascinating read, and it's fascinating information, because now it puts these supposedly heroes like Alexander Hamilton into context of, you know, how he spoke out of one side of his mouth to, you know, to get you to buy into the Constitution, then started stretching and actually lying and using deceit of implied powers and so forth out of the other side of his mouth. These guys were fork-tongued people. Now, I don't know if they were unrighteous people, but they were fork-tongued. Which side do you believe? The only, when it comes down to, is Hamilton correct after the ratification debates or before? Well, you got to look at it this way. When Hamilton was saying that, you know, if Hamilton said that you get a chicken in every pot once a year from the federal government, and everybody bought into that concept, then that would be a legally binding, you know, liability that the federal government would have to fulfill, that everybody would get a chicken in the pot once a year. And that's what you have to believe. But when somebody comes back later and says, no, it's this and we have these things, it doesn't matter what they say. The only thing that they say that matters legally, not to interpret and to pervert what they said during the ratification debates. Was there anything in the ratification debates that supported Hamilton's implied powers? No, nothing. No, not at all. And so the fact remains that that is why the ratification debates are probably the greatest treasure. And this is why your kids, if you want your kids to understand the Constitution, they need to read, and you're more than welcome to go to MobiStripPress.com and read the extracts. I just have a paragraph here, a paragraph there, and I tell you the site, I cite it and show you where you can go to actually pull these things down from the Constitution Society. And that way you can actually see for yourself exactly what these men said and how the Constitution was sold. Those are what's legally binding. Not these machinations, not these nefarious tongue twistings and, you know, forked tongue soothsaying arguments by John Marshall, by Hamilton, and all of these other people. My friends, they have been attacking the Constitution, and this is why going through this information is so important. So in our next episode, we're going to be focused and we're going to be reading the cod fishery bounties, the arguments that basically went back and forth between Madison and Mr. Livingston. I believe it was Mr. Livingston that Madison was arguing with over the ability for the federal government, or I should say the public purse, to be used for the, you know, the welfare and the assistance of helping, let's just say, you know, the cod fisheries, or let's just say, you know, those poor people down in New Orleans, the poor people that are here in Houston. There is nothing in the Constitution at all that grants the federal government the ability to use the tax money, the public purse, to assist in any way or form, any way or form for, you know, the local inhabitants from a hurricane, an earthquake. It doesn't matter. They can't. They don't have that authority. This is where states need to start working together when there's a need for an emergency. It's the state's job. It is the state's responsibility, not the national government. And by giving it to them, look at what they've done to us today. They've now locked us into our own homes. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.